Have we just...
That's all right.
Before we start.
Record. So I can pause it again. So welcome. this is the first interview I'm doing with biomechanics coaches where I've got a duo. Kim and Chris are going to introduce themselves, but ultimately our connection, as always, like all these interviews, is the biomechanics coaching diploma. So shall we start with Kim? Do you want to, who are you, what do you do? And that will inevitably link across to Chris.
Yes. So Kim Tomlin, business partner with Chris, who, if I do that, is actually below me, but I don't know where he is for you, Rachel.
Me.
I think I'm above.
Around there. We co-own the Movement Hub, which is behind me. This is our studio, or was our studio. So I am a personal trainer, biomechanics coach, primal flow and level one animal flow instructor. So the Movement Hub is all about kind of focusing on movement. So we have individuals, we have athletes, we have your average person looking to improve their health and fitness. But our main focus is just getting those people moving appropriately for whatever their goal is. So I've been since 2011, so yes, a while in the industry. And then obviously as a biomechanics coach, I am now teaching the biomechanics trainer course and was about to be teaching some of the diploma, but we'll see where that goes going forward, won't we? So some things have changed a little bit. Kind of moved from the PT side of things, got really involved in movement, exploring it either just through exercise or through the biomechanics coaching, just understanding how people move. And then I've gradually kind of moved into sort of teaching alongside that as well. So that's something I'd like to be doing more of definitely in the future.
Yeah, me too. I want you to be doing more of that. I think, Chris, you're from a similar but then completely different background as well, aren't you?
Pretty similar in a lot of ways, aren't we, I guess. And then I guess the difference is I've gone a little bit more down the clinical side of things as well. So as well as work as a personal trainer, I'm trained as an osteopath as well. So working more of a therapy setting, but then still do a lot of PT as well alongside it. Tend to focus more so down the performance side of things, specifically working with endurance athletes. So predominantly runners, but cyclists and triathletes as well.
You look like you're buffed up, Chris. I'm fair to say that. You look like you're buffed up a bit.
I don't know. It's probably just like excess beer, you know?
Because coming from kind of endurance, kind of like genetic makeup myself as well, like running, not all the other stuff that I know you do, you know, it's that tough bit is putting a bit of weight on. So I know for you've been doing a lot of the tri stuff, but is that, do you think from having a gym now you've got access to, not right now but pre-lockdown, were you lifting more weights, do you think? Or
yes and no. I mean, essentially, yeah. I mean, getting to a schedule with the lifting, there's not tons and tons of lifting, it depends on when in the year as well, ideally. Obviously, it depends on working schedules and family and everything too. But ideally, I like to try and get probably like one or two lifting sessions per week when I'm doing a little bit more volume in my own outdoor training, and then up that to kind of two or three sessions lifting when I'm doing less volume in the outdoor training and therefore a little bit more in the gym.
Yeah. And are you really more focused on whole body movement rather than using weights, or do you combine the two because of your animal flow, primal flow? What do I call it?
Primal flow and animal flow are different.
Right. Yeah, I thought so. Primal flow, like that background, because sometimes body weight, I think, can be higher or more intense than using kilos, depending on content.
It can be really challenging. I enjoy lifting weights, so I do include lifting weights.
Right.
But I like to play around with movement, really, because it is tough. If you do it well, you can make it challenging, even just by slowing down movements with your body weight, you know. And if we move through more ranges and different angles, then we definitely can challenge ourselves in ways that we wouldn't necessarily challenge with your normal kind of lifting patterns and routines.
One t-shirt on challenge thing.
Yeah, that one.
Did you make
that?
There
was a t-shirt that was a problem.
Okay, so right now, as we're talking, we're in this lockdown. We're 6 weeks in, I think. Chris, well, both of you, but if I come to Chris just for ease of the kind of video, what are you doing? How are you coping with your business, which is a very practical business, obviously, during lockdown? Are you delivering it? How are you doing that? And how has it changed what you're doing right now?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's changed things massively, to be fair, hasn't it? It's we're still lucky enough to be delivering online sessions. So our clients have been amazing with us in terms of the support that they've offered. We've transferred everything basically that we do to online as much as possible. So we run, still do a lot of the group personal training, one-to-one couples, classes. And then we're obviously offering remote therapy services as well. So we're still doing online therapy sessions as well. So, yeah.
How do you do online therapy?
Yeah, it sounds like such a foreign concept, doesn't it? It sounds like it's bizarre, especially when coming from more of a manual therapy-based background as well, which can be, especially osteopathy, you know, is kind of known for being very hands-on. And really, kind of initially, you know, I had the same sort of questions, and what I tend to do and the way that I tend to treat is actually very exercise based. Right. So the transition has been a lot easier than it might have been for some people. Very much so in terms of what I do tends to be more around the education side of things with patients, you know, showing them what they can do rather than me doing things to them so much.
Yeah.
So, you know, I use bits of manual therapy, you know, here and there with bits, but it's not necessarily the main focus of what I do with people anyway.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of reinforce that, if anything, so that we can use exercise, education and reinsurance for people.
Yeah, and it's a big part, isn't it, of what we as a group of professionals have always been involved with, is trying to help the client, educate the client, help them move themselves, and all the other stuff. If we do put the hands on, etc., is kind of it's just to speed it up or help them along the way, or maybe contribute more, isn't it? So the big question I'm asking everybody that I'm quite intrigued about, maybe Kim, if you want to go first on this one, how do you think lockdown is going to change the industry long term? Short term, obviously it has, but if we went long term, like 5-10 years from now, do you think the industry will forever be changed? And if so, how, in your opinion?
Well, yes, definitely it's changed. Obviously, online delivery of personal training in groups or classes or one-to-one and even therapy is something that's existed anyway, but just not for a lot of us. It's not something that we've perhaps considered. So it's always kind of been there, but now it's just been massively fast-tracked and we're all doing it because it's the only way that we can survive as businesses, even as just on our own or partners or gyms, whatever, to actually provide a service. And obviously that has now, everyone's online, so everyone's looking for ways to stay fit and healthy because they can't actually get out, or they've suddenly started to think about, oh, I can do something that they haven't normally done before. So at the moment, the industry's sort of in some way booming, but it's how you tap into that, and then whether that continues once we're allowed out, because some people that would be working aren't working. So how will that affect when they go back to work? Are they going to have the same time? Are they people going to go back to the same routines that they had? But the potential is there for more online stuff to maybe sit alongside face-to-face stuff. I mean, we've discussed, Chris and I, that, you know, remote therapy is actually something that we might do more of, and or even do a mixture of remote and like face-to-face with people. So it's definitely opened up ways that we can increase our reach, which is a brilliant thing to do. In all honesty, I have no idea what it's going to look like when we're allowed back out there, because we don't even know when that's going to be. We don't even know how that's going to look, you know, in terms of how many people we might be allowed in an area as we get back to whatever normal life might look like. So it could be a very slow process for our industry to even get back to whatever normal was before. So this is potentially something that we're going to have to do for a lot longer than we thought we might have to. So we've got to embrace it really and make the most of it, which I think is brilliant.
I do. I'm slightly excited by it, and I don't mean that to sound like I'm underplaying the people who are traumatized, you know, going through horrific times, losing family members. I don't mean for a minute to, you know, belittle that kind of concept. I'm down with that. I understand that. But the flip side is, as you say, we have the capacity for further reach. But taking it online and thinking long term, Chris, do you think, and particularly I think from an osteopathic view, I'm quite interested, is there a moral, ethical aspect that we need to consider about this online concept, like short, mid and long term? How do you feel about that sort of morally and ethically? You seem quite comfortable with it. How do we make sure we're not caught out? How do we make sure we're still providing duty of care when we're doing these things online?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, I've been sort of listening to a lot of different viewpoints on this up to this point, and even before I started offering it, to be fair, you know, it was something that we kind of looked at a little bit in the past anyway and things. So it's not kind of that much of a new concept, if you like, and actually it's been out there for years already. It's just that it's just not talked about as much. It's very much kind of, you know, we see therapy as, you know, you come in and, you know, this trained practitioner might, you know, feel something, and therefore that would kind of, that's what they base their diagnosis on. Whereas actually that's probably the least part, but for my point of view, you know, it's definitely a section of, you know, the findings that we're getting, but actually most of the information that we want to gain in terms of formulating a working diagnosis comes off the back of the subjective case history and the questioning and getting to know that person as an individual and what's going to help them move forward. So yes, we still have to be really on it in terms of, you know, making sure that we're checking for any kind of red flags and things like that. So looking for any signs of potential of serious pathology, and making sure that we're really safe. But actually, not much changes there in terms of the guidelines, in terms of onward referral, because we're acting as a sort of a, we're basically triaging to a certain extent, and then just kind of thinking, right, okay, can we work with this or not? Do I feel that there's anything that's underlying here or anything else to be considering? And if I'm unsure, I can refer out as normal.
Yeah, and I think you've hit the nail on the head, which is why I'm on a project at the minute with Martin and Mike to look at what I think could be a long-term solution for the health and fitness industry, linked with the clinicians, in terms of a kind of an online first point of, like, where Kim and I would do a parkour, for example, from the exercise world, but it's got all the clinical questions in that you might ask. Yep. That enables a personal trainer to send a client to fill that out as a normal part of the process. Any of the questions that get across, rather than a tick or a tick, whatever it is, they get signposted to you or Mike or Martin or whatever it is, to have another consultation, which then rules out more potential underlying issues. And then if not, they come straight to us. And I just think there's a huge amount of pain out there, as we all know, that actually exercise can solve anyway, like more than clinical pain or pathological pain that might need a treatment or a diagnosis or something like that, which is why I think, as you're suggesting, actually online is a good place to rule all that out and say, no, you just go this way or you go this way. Or I must share that with you. I'm getting more and more excited about it, especially when I speak to you now and Kim and the guys. So I'll let you know more about that when I get to it. But let's get back to this anyway. So it's not in place yet. So do you come across common, like, misconceptions, Kim, maybe as a personal trainer, from other trainers, coaches, about your knowledge in biomechanics or what biomechanics is? Do you think there is a common misconception compared to posture assessment, for example, or kind of like regular testing, FMS and stuff?
Yeah, I suppose it's just there is no right way for a person to move. basically. We're all individual. There are things that we could do to help improve movement if it's needed. Some people might be feeling discomfort, but that doesn't necessarily mean if we go to posture that their posture is wrong, whatever wrong means. And I think we can get caught up on correcting posture, but what does correcting posture actually mean? Posture changes throughout the day. It's not static. We're designed to move, and our whatever posture we're in is the right one for that moment. And then if you move around because it's a bit uncomfortable, then you're in your new posture, and that's okay. So I think people can get a bit hung up on trying to change things that don't need changing. And I know that comes across quite a lot with Chris in therapy, wherever he is. it's understanding the difference, you know, like obviously we can make cues for people, like give people cues, external cues, you know, do this, change that. But again, that isn't always changing it to something that is right for that person in front of us. So understanding how we move, why we move differently, other things might be influencing our biomechanics and our postures, or how we stand or how we do a movement, is probably what the biomechanics coaching side has kind of brought to light for me, I suppose, in terms of like delving deeper into movement itself, what happens on the inside as well as what happens visually on the outside.
This is why I love your business name. So collectively, the two of you and the way you practice is as the movement hub. Like, you're a hub of, which implies that like stuff goes on, is how I interpret it. But it's all geared around movement. So even as a personal trainer, exercise professional and osteopath, you know, kind of collectively it is fundamentally movement. So Chris, from your perspective then, and being a clinician, Do you feel there's more stereotyping expectation from the clients about what you do versus Kim, or is it same? Like,
yeah. Do you mean in terms of what trainer versus therapist sort of side, or
yeah,
definitely. I think there's people come in expecting very specific things.
Yeah.
A lot of the time they, again, depending on the person and, you know, what they've experienced previously as well, seems to make a massive difference. So this is why kind of our online content that we put out on social media might be a little bit different as well in terms of the therapy side. Whereas instead of showing the specifics of different things and different kind of more specific exercises, if you like, it's very much more based around principles and based around things like that. And kind of even recently we put one out about tightness and tension, and you know, and what that might be to different people, and actually different influences of that, like things like even, you know, lack of sleep, you know, changing diet, things like that can actually all influence how we feel and therefore potentially how we move as well. So it's just a little bit different. So I mean, we have a lot of different chat, and there's a lot of it just works very well between me and Kim in terms of we see a lot of the same people as well, and some of the people will start coming for therapy but actually end up in our classes or our groups, because that's actually kind of the way for them to move forwards as well, which works really well for both of them and for us. But yeah, I think in terms of when we actually chat in the therapy sessions around the different things that they might need to change or add to what they're doing, there's a lot of similarities there between what me and Kim do, obviously based around movement. And it's not necessarily, I think some people come looking for, you know, one specific stretch that they need to be doing that's going to like totally revolutionize, you know, like the way that they move and this pain that they've had for years and things. So it's just nice to have that conversation with them and just educate them a little bit more in terms of just how complex like the human body is, and that pain's so multifactorial that it's not just about a muscular state and that being it. So yeah, does that answer your question?
Yeah, sorry, absolutely. I kind of have like I don't know what the word is, I have business envy, like the setup that you two have got, A, the kind of multifaceted skill sets you've got between you, but then the commonality between you as well. Yeah. And the idea that actually anybody who joins your gym, your facility, or comes to see one of you probably doesn't realize the extent of the quality of information they're going to get. Because I think a huge part of what you and Mike does in his clinic as well with the team is the education part and the realization you don't just come along to get fixed and we'll crack that and then off yeah. you go. And that's exciting for me, having you both as sort of UK leading educators in your area for sort of the biomechanics coaching diploma and the offshoot workshops off that. But also, you know, I know you're teaching some of Mike's content as well. So being able to influence more people, I just think it's brilliant. And so I'm so excited to have you guys, you know, within our community, if you like. So it's good to hear that kind of carries on through your whole system. But so Kim, then, okay, let's ask you about, do you have a memorable client that iMove Freely had, like this, or the biomechanics coaching diploma, or whatever it was, or your skill sets, just had a moment of like, you'll never forget that moment, or that client, or was there something, a case study? You don't have to give us details of who they are, but were a moment where something magic happened?
I think generally, there's been a couple of people that sort of stood out in terms of just that immediate kind of response to some of the iMove Freely exercises. Obviously, we start at the pelvis with all those exercises, the foci or leg press. And combined, so because of the movement side for me, I've always really combined the two things together. So started with that and then just got people moving off the back of it. Because it's given them the capacity to move potentially a little bit better, and therefore when they do move, they're like, oh, this is amazing, like, oh yeah, everything feels so much better. And at that instant, the feeling is always the nicest bit to see, because that's the buy-in, that they're not stuck the way they were. They can improve things and they don't have to be doing like this one fancy stretch or this one crazy move or whatever it is, like Chris was speaking about before. They can make changes and it can be really simple and it can be immediate as well. It's not necessarily going to take forever, but obviously those changes need to embed as well. So they need to learn that it's not just about once doing something, which can happen a lot. Feel better, did it once, go away, come back, still, you know, not feeling great. So how many times have you done it? Well, I did it that once. So that's the education side of it. You know, we do need to keep still doing things. We still need to keep doing this. And it is a process and it's not something that you just do once. And we always teach, don't we, on the diploma, that you're given a little tool set, you're given a little toolbox of things to go away with. This is your own personal plan to move better and more freely. So I've not had any really like majorly outstanding, other than that people are like, oh, I just feel so much better about moving and everything feels more comfortable. And ultimately that's what we want people to feel. That's why they're coming to us, because they don't.
Yeah. And I think it just came to me then, the idea that because we educate practitioners or professionals, don't we, as the Movement Hub Academy. Is that right? You've got the Movement Hub. Call it the Movement Club Academy.
Yeah.
Teaching practitioners the biomechanics trainer skills, iMove Freely, the therapy stuff from movement therapy clinics, education. But actually, even in the gym, your members are going through a school of education when they come in, and let's say they have pain, and Chris, you assess them and you say, right, okay, this is fine, but you need to go into the sessions now. And they're effectively coming through the Movement Hub member school of movement education. Is that how you saw it, Chris?
Yeah, I think it's always been when we've kind of discussed, wow, God, we've had years of discussion, haven't we, before we even like came together officially as a business. Like we ran different events together previously, and our two businesses kind of worked alongside for a long time before we officially kind of like made it one business. And yeah, I mean, I can't say that we've specifically gone like, you know, this is, you know, like you might do your courses, you know, where you do this and then you might go on to a step and do this. But in terms of just thinking about the background of the business and how things run, and what we were really passionate about is providing was something that was really ethical alongside what we were doing as well, which was a case of getting people from a place that they didn't want to be, you know, whether that be in pain, whether it just be, you know, fed up or they want to perform better, and that we're providing just really ethical, well evidenced, just good solutions for them, that we have absolutely no barriers to, that we're just like, we look forward to you doing these services basically so that we can see them flourish.
Yeah. I love listening to you talking about it. Here I join. Okay.
We do online services as well.
Again?
We do online services as well.
Forever the salesman. Well, I'm actually doing Kim's.
Oh, cool, yeah.
I've been dying to do it for, well, ever since I've known you, I've been like, when are you doing a workshop? So I'm going to be doing Kim's Primal Flow Saturday.
Yes.
Okay. So last couple of questions, Kim. Book recommendation, favourite book, can be anything, could be industry related or not.
Well, I'm going to go a little off-piste because I've been reading a lot of business books recently. And that's probably been what I've been delving into more. But I really love two YouTube resources, which is the Khan Academy and Anatomy Zone. Now, I learn much better visually. So they've got some really, really good videos on anatomy, physiology, biology, nutrition. So in terms of anatomy for me, I love being able to see something move with its outer and then it, like, peel back the layers and stuff. So in terms of good educational resource, I'd point someone to there. As
Khan Academy, so what was it again?
Khan Academy, K-H-A-N.
Yeah, and
the Anatomy Zone.
Oh, I'll have a look at those.
Yeah, they've just got some really good like little videos and they just talk through kind of the bony structures and the muscles and attachments and etc. and how they move.
In piriformis action years ago, you know, the guy with the skellies and the rubber band showing piriformis go from an external rotator to an internal rotator, and that was like, oh, I need to use this resource, but years ago. But it always reminds me of why I prefer visual, because I'm trying to imagine it inside the skelly. I used to struggle with that, but then seeing it. Brilliant. Recommend before, but that's good. Chris, book recommend or YouTube or podcast?
I mean, there's so many good resources out there anyway, isn't there? I think a massive influential book for me, at least in terms of movement side. So there's an author called Todd Hargrove. He was just on a podcast the other evening, actually. He's got two books out now, both books have been massively influential, I think, in terms of definitely the way that I've viewed movement and different considerations for it too. One of them is definitely called Playing with Movement, which I think might be his second book, actually. His books have just, the language that he uses in terms of the descriptions and, you know, potentials of just thinking about different mechanisms as well, for movement, for adapting sensation around movement as well, and building, you know, neural pathways and things like that. And kind of, yeah, the whole kind of concept, if you really step back and take a broad view on it, it's kind of massive principles that you can just use for everything.
So,
Todd Hargrove.
Grove. I'll check that one out. That's brilliant. So, obviously, there'll be people watching this who might want to subscribe. They might want to come and see you because you're in. Are you in Leeds? Because things are changing at the moment. So, still Leeds?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, what's your website? Where can they find you? How can they sign up for your stuff? right now, in the future, what information? So, Kim.
So yeah, website is www.themovementhub.co.uk. That actually does have links to all of our social media. So we're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, which we don't really use very much, and YouTube. So we do have a YouTube channel, The Movement Hub. If you search for that, it will bring it up. And we've actually been putting the kind of real-time primal flows that I've been doing on a Saturday on there, and all Chris's therapy videos are on there or going on there very soon. And there are some other resources that we've done ages ago. So there's quite a few primal flows on there from previous as well. So if anyone wants to check out those. But yeah, I think Instagram, we're at The Movement Hub. Same for Twitter, and Facebook is just The Movement Hub. Just Movement Hub.
And last question before I let you all go, because I know you've got things going on. Have you got a venue? Have you got things sorted for when we're released? Have you got somewhere? Are you kind of like, because I know that you were on the cusp of things. Is there anything you talk about, or can you not talk about it?
This was where we used to be. We still are kind of there, because obviously we've not been able to do anything. But we are trying to work out how we're going to move from here. We're still negotiating for a new place, but it's just really difficult right now. Like, how do you negotiate moving into a new place when you don't even know when that's going to be?
No problem at all. Place, if anybody was watching. So I really appreciate it. I'm so honoured and proud to have you guys on the team as master trainers. I want to be talking to you soon, so I'm going to be setting up a call for all the master trainers. I've got some thoughts about end of the year, next year, just some ideas that I want to run by you. So, but until then, thanks ever so much for joining me on this, and stay safe, have a great week, and I'll catch you soon. Cheers, guys.